crawling behind the gate. The gate swings into the stretch, and here they come. They're horsing around.
Hey, folks, it's Kelly Bell here. Today, I am horsing around with one of my all-time favorite harness racing historians. Welcome to the show, Dean Hoffman.
Thank you very much, Kelly. It's my pleasure.
Oh, it's such a joy to talk to you. You know, I follow you on social media, and I noticed that you're not out in Arizona right now, that you've been traveling around the East. You were in Ohio, and then the next thing I knew, you were up where they did the Harness Racing Awards ceremonies last week. Where was that held at? Is that New York, New Jersey?
That was held in Goshen, New York, which is about an hour kind of northwest of New York City. Goshen is kind of considered the cradle of the trotter because so much of the early racing in the 1800s, the foundation stallions, they all came from that area. So Goshen was nicknamed Trot Town USA. The Hamiltonian was held in Goshen for many years, and that's where the Harness Racing Museum and Hall of Fame is located.
Oh, my gosh. Did you get a chance to go into the museum while you were there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was a ceremony on Sunday night about 10 days ago or so. Not even that long, a week ago. And it's held on the lawn just outside the museum. And I've been in the museum many times, and they put up a tent. And there are several hundred people there. I think they had to limit it a little bit because of state COVID restrictions, but it's a wonderful event, and they honor people who go into the Living Hall of Fame, people who are immortals, who are deceased but worthy of recognition, and they also honor people in the writer's corner. That's people like me, journalists that are elected by their peers for their journalistic efforts. So, yeah, I've been there lots, and it's always a great evening.
Absolutely. And actually, I did get to watch some of the ceremony on YouTube, I believe it was. It might have been the USTA's channel. I saw that you were a presenter during the ceremony. Can you tell us what you did?
More properly, I guess I was introducing Tom Charters, who's the immediate past president of the Hamiltonian Society. Tom is a native of Springfield, Ohio. And in my introduction, Tom said, well, I don't know who could better introduce you, me than you, because he said, you're the one I've known the longest. And I just talked about, in fact, my comment was that Tom and I have been so many friends for so many years that we actually can't remember, or we disagree on when we first met. He says it was 1967 at the Xenia Fair, but it's going back a long way, and we've been good friends for many years, and I was honored to introduce Tom when he got inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Well, I actually watched that, and I would love it if you would recap that intro a little bit for our listeners who might not know who Tom is and what some of his contributions were. You mentioned the Hamiltonian, but I believe in your speech you also mentioned that one of the things that he changed is that he created recognition for the grooms, as well as a lot of other really great stuff.
Yeah, Tom and I, we've had, you know, not similar, but somewhat parallel career paths. We both are natives of Ohio. We both started out, as most people start out, as a caretakers at the bottom rung, taking care of horses. And then Tom went on to be a race secretary at the Meadows in Pennsylvania, and then he went to Macau, an island near Hong Kong. He came back to the United States in the early 80s. He was hired to basically coordinate the beginning of the Breeders' Crown Series, which was owned by the Hamiltonian Society, and he was not the president of the Hamiltonian Society then, but he was the director of the Breeders' Crown, which was like an adjunct of the Breeders', the Hamiltonian Society. And then he was elevated to the position of president of the Hamiltonian Society. So that means he's responsible for all the finances, all the legal matters, all the scheduling of races. And one of the things that Tom has taken it upon himself is to go back through the records and try to find the caretakers of the Hamiltonian records. The Hamiltonian was first released in 1926, and in many cases the groom or the caretaker was overlooked. But Tom really did a lot of research. This is kind of a personal mission of his to make sure that the caretakers weren't overlooked and forgotten. So I think he said he's got about five or six more character winners of the Hamiltonian where he can't identify the caretaker. But Tom will keep working on that. And I just find that, you know, that's the horse gets recognition, the owner, the trainer, the driver, but the groom was forgotten, and Tom didn't forget.
Well, I think that is absolutely wonderful. And one of the things that I've learned since I entered this sport doing interviews is oftentimes the grooms know more about a particular horse than anyone else out there. They're watching them day to day. They're tuned in to anything that might be going on with that particular animal. And
the grooms basically live with their horses. I mean, they know their eating habits. They know, you know, just their energy level. I mean, I was a caretaker, a groom for a couple of summers, and you get to know a horse around it every day. And horses are like people. They have different personalities. Some of them are very pleasant, fun to be around. Some of them are kind of mean and a little bit dangerous. But as you work with that horse, you get to know the horse, and as they're like people, all a little different. Some are big, some are little, some are fast, some are slow. But the caretaker is the one that by far spends the most time with the horse.
Well, this is fascinating. I could talk about this all day. Dean Hoffman, you are someone who knows more about harness racing than anyone else I've ever interviewed. So I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break, get a word from our sponsors, and then we're going to come back with more from Dean Hoffman.
It's mud season. Are you looking for a fix in a muddy situation? Cashman's has you covered, offering innovative mud control solutions. We are also your number one source for the best deals on rubber mats for multi-use flooring, perfect for horse stalls, garages, and gyms. Cashman's Horse Equipment has been serving the equine community for over 40 years. Come and visit our location in Delaware, Ohio, and shop over 10 acres of equine farm and livestock supplies. Shop online anytime at cashmans.com.
Be sure to catch the new podcast, The Top of the Stretch, presented by the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association. The podcast keeps fans of racing in the Buckeye State up to date on various topics concerning the sport of harness racing. The news and views of top officials, owners, trainers, drivers, and breeders in Ohio. That's the all-new podcast, Top of the Stretch, on the Facebook page of the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association. Be there!
Looking for that special gift for the horse lover in your life? Bow River Jewelry provides custom-made designs using state-of-the-art equipment, hand finishing, and quality stones to ensure your jewelry reflects that love of horses. Bow River Jewelry creates 14-karat gold rings, bracelets, and watches that uniquely exemplify the mutual love between horses and humans. Contact them at bowriverjewelry.com to see the variety of horse-inspired jewelry available, or call 888-860-7483 with custom inquiries.
Hey folks, it's Kelly Bell. I'm back with my guest today, Dean Hoffman, on Horsin' Around. Dean, you were talking to us before the break about what was going on at the awards dinner, and can you tell us about some of the other people who were recognized at the event this year?
Well, as I indicated, my longtime friend and partner on horses and partner in crime over the years, Tom Charters, was honored for his role as president of the Hamiltonian Society. There was a veteran trainer and driver, Bill Popfinger, from New York, now based in Florida, who was honored. Bill Popfinger is a handsome, charismatic man. He actually played a bit part in some movies that featured harness racing, and that thus led to the name Showbiz Bill. And he was a good-looking guy, won the Little Brown Jug in an upset in 1978. It's one of those races where it came down to a three-horse race-off, and his horse was by far the long shot. But he he tried a very daring and unorthodox move, and he won the jug, and will ever be known for that. So Bill Pottfinger has paid his dues over a long period of time. It wasn't just winning the jug, a lot of good horses over many years. A much younger driver, Tim Tietrich from Illinois, only 39 years old. Now, Bill Pottfinger's got to be well into his 70s, if not pushing 80, but still in very good condition. Tim Tietrich, by contrast, is 39, got his start at the Illinois Fairs as a driver. The family, the Tietrich family's long had success in Illinois, but Tim came to the Meadowlands and made a big splash with his driving abilities and has driven jug winners, Hamiltonian winners, top driver, and only 39 years old. So you kind of wonder what lies ahead for Tim Tietrich because he's accomplished so much before turning age 40.
You know, I watched that on the award ceremony replay, and he got a little bit choked up. You know, you could tell that he was really moved and clearly has a deep, deep love for the sport and all the people in it. It was touching.
He got very choked up, and that's understandable. I mean, it is a great honor, and to achieve it at such a, you know, I think 39 is a young age, you know, because you're talking about career accomplishments, and he's got still many years ahead of him. So gosh knows what will be his career record when he finally quits driving. But, yeah, Tim got very emotional. I don't know if he expected that or he just said, all I ever wanted to do is drive horses, race horses. And, of course, he was born with a gift to do that and has achieved great success. So, yeah, I think a lot of people were touched by his emotion, and you know, everyone honors that. The fourth honoree was Jeff Goral. Jeff is a New Yorker by heart, grew up there, was in the commercial real estate business. But when he was in college, upstate New York at RPI, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, up north like of Saratoga, up the Hudson River, he would often grab some of his cronies and go to the local harness and thoroughbred tracks to bet. He loved to go to the races, and he was just a college kid then, I think from a fairly wealthy family, but just sneaking off to the races when he maybe should have been studying, and he'll be the first to admit that, dragged his wife to many tracks where she was probably bored to death, but he was having a great time. Jeff achieved great financial and professional success in the commercial real estate business in Manhattan. But he owned horses and bred horses. And then about 10 years ago, the state of New Jersey said, we're losing money on the Meadowlands racetrack. We don't want to lose money on this. We're closing it. And it was the flagship track of harness racing. And literally at the last moment, the very last, I mean, it was just hours away from being officially closed, Jeff Goral swept in, saved the Meadowlands, money out of his own pocket. He is now the lessee of the track, operates it. I would imagine he loses a lot of money operating that racetrack. Jeff has, with the new sheriff in town, he's got some of his own rules. He's a stickler for integrity in racing and no drugs. And if you are a trainer who is dabbling in drugs at the Meadowlands, the sheriff is going to get you, and that's Jeff Goral. And he's really placed a great emphasis on racing integrity, and I admire him for that. And Jeff's not a young man. I think Jeff is probably pushing 80, and maybe he is 80. I don't know. And he's kind of laid down the law, and if he feels that someone's doing something to affect the integrity of the races, hit the road, Jack. You're not welcome at Yonkers. So I have great admiration for him.
That's really, really good. And we talked about this in a previous episode with Keith Gisser. We were talking about some of the controversy in the thoroughbred world when it comes to illegal medications and all the hoopla about that. But one thing I keep coming back to is that what might be prevalent in the world of thoroughbreds, you just don't see those incidents as often in harness racing. There does seem to be much more integrity on this side of the sport, and that's one of the things that I really like about the people that I've met that are involved.
I think that most horsemen are working hard to do things honestly and honorably. There will always be rotten apples in every barrel. But then it's like some drugs, if you know, there's eight horses in the race and five or six of them are racing on a drug which is legal, very controversial drug is Lasix, and two horses aren't racing, you know, those other horses have an advantage. And so there's a lot of pressure on trainers to use the latest veterinary voodoo to make your horses go faster. And I don't like it. I understand the pressure on the trainers and the owners because it's a very expensive business to be in, owning and training horses. And so, yeah, there's a lot of pressure. I know that I've been to Europe many times, and a lot of the drugs, such as Lasix, that is used routinely here, they're forbidden in the rest of the world. So, but anyway, that I think that's one thing that Jeff has done and emphasized is to try to have a clean sport.
Well, let me touch on this subject just a little bit more. I've learned a lot about Lasix in the past year, and it's my understanding that any time a human or any mammal exerts itself aerobically at championship levels, that you can get some mucus or blood in your lungs, right? It's just right. The exertion that causes that. And when you use Lasix, it reduces that amount of bleeding in your lungs, which is actually good for the horse. It's therapeutic for them. But then on the other hand, you can say that that could be performance enhancing. So with all of your knowledge, where do you land on that? If you could wave your magic wand and have it be a certain way, would you approve of Lasix or not?
No, I would actually disapprove of it because I've been to Europe many times, and they're just astonished that American horses, you know, 90% of them, 95% of them race on Lasix. I remember one time on Hamiltonian Day at the Meadowlands, early August, hot, humid, and Lasix is a diuretic, and it eliminates water from the system. And this guy watched these horses standing in the paddock, an enclosed barn with very little airflow, all huffing and puffing and sweating and urinating, which is one of the effects of Lasix. And he said, this is almost inhumane, where we are dehydrating these horses before they go out to race. We should be hydrating them. But this was a European, and he's accustomed to a no-drug environment. I know some people say, well, it's inhumane to ask them to race without Lasix. So, the United States and Canada are the only place that Lasix is allowed. I mean, there's racing in Europe, in the Middle East, in Japan, India, Australia, New Zealand, not legal there. So, and horses race without Lasix in the United States until recent decades. I mean, it's a relatively recent development in racing.
Dean Hoffman, we are out of time. I thank you so much for spending a little time with us today, and will I see you at the Jug this year?
You couldn't keep me away. You couldn't keep me away. So I'll be there, Kelly.
And Kelly's going to be there, too. I'm Michelle Gatchel, and coming up next on Horsin' Around, we're going to talk to Bill Peters. He is the Ohio Fair Racing Conference race secretary, and one of two, and he is going to tell us about an upcoming races at the Ottawa County Fair at Oak Harbor Track, specifically about five horses that are doing really well in the races so far. One's called Bippity Boppity Blue. I just like saying it. So stay right there, and we'll hear from Bill Peters next.
Looking for your next quality standard bred racehorse? Look no further than Sugar Valley Farm in Delaware, Ohio. Sugar Valley Farm offers stud services anywhere in the world, providing the best stallions available at any price point. With a stallion roster full of names like Well Said, Lather Up, Mr. Wiggles, and Down by the Seaside, winning must be in the water. For more info, call 1-740-363-5618. That's 1-740-363-5618 for Sugar Valley Farm.
With more than 300,000 horses in Ohio, the economic impact of the equine industry in the state is over $1.4 billion. Much of that value comes from standardbred horse owners, breeders, trainers, and drivers who participate in the sport of harness racing. The mission of the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association is to preserve, protect, promote, and serve the entire standardbred industry in Ohio and beyond. To learn more about the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association, go to OHHA.com.
Welcome back to Horsing Around. I am with Bill Peters, and Bill is the Ohio Fair Racing Conference Racing Secretary, or one of. There are two of you, huh, Bill?
That's right. Todd Brown is the other one.
Okay. So, gosh, Bill, we've had two sets of races for the Ohio Fair Racing Conference, one in Paulding County and one in Marion County. In the Marion County, how did that go?
Very well. We had 31 races there. We had 14 the first day and 17 the second day, broke some of the individual track records. And then in the very, very last race affair, Professor Patrick, who was owned and trained by, John Fitzgerald, from Marysville and was driven by Hank LeVan, broke the overall track record pacing mile in 158 flat.
Nice.
Anyway, he paid pretty well, as I recall. He was definitely not the favorite in that race. So.
Wow, wow. So those two races lead up to Oak Harbor in Ottawa County. And give me a little history about Oak Harbor Racetrack.
Okay, well, Oak Harbor is probably one of the newer fairgrounds in the state. Most of the fairgrounds, you know, have been there since the late 1800s. But the Ottawa County Fairgrounds at Oak Harbor was built in the late 1960s. I believe they first raced there in 1868. So it's one of the newer ones. But the thing that sets it off from the other fairs is that the Portage River flows right down along the back stretch. It's a very scenic fairgrounds. If you've never been to the Ottawa County Fairgrounds, you should join the racing there to see it, because it's really scenic with that river flowing right down along the back stretch.
So how many days of racing do they have there at Oak Harbor?
They have two. We'll race on this Monday, July 19th, and Tuesday, July 20th, with a 5 p.m. post time each day.
Okay. And so any horses we should look forward to coming into these races?
For the first two fairs at Paulding and Marion, we had five horses that won at both fairs. We only had five that won at both fairs. They were Mr. Not Nice, who was trained by Roshan Trigg in the two-year-old colt pace. Imaginette, trained by Kent Wilcox, is a three-year-old colt pacer. Bippity Boppity Blue, a two-year-old filly trotter trained by Rosie Weaver. Fortunate Survivor, a three-year-old filly pacer trained by Mike Sweeney, and Chip It In, a three-year-old filly trotter trained by Chris Bieber. Those five were the only ones that won at both Paulding and Marion. So those would be five to be looking for to race at the Ottawa County Fair at Oak Harbor.
Nice. And about how many races on each race card each day?
I would expect we'll probably have around 11 races each day.
Okay. And what time do the races start each day?
5 o'clock each day.
5 o'clock each day. So you can bet on the races.
That's correct. They have pari-mutuel wagering at the Ottawa County Fair.
And the OHHA will be there also to do Facebook Live?
Yes. These will be live streamed through the OHHA Facebook.
Okay, great. So check it out, the Oak Harbor Racetrack, a very scenic view on the Portage River. All right. Well, gosh, Bill, thank you so much for giving us an update. What's next after Ottawa County?
Then we have two fairs. We have three fairs coming up real quickly after that would be the Union County Fair at Marysville, the Seneca County Fair at Tiffin, and the Lake County Fair at Painesville. I'm the race secretary for the Seneca County Fair, and Todd Brown is the race secretary for both the Union County Fair and the Lake County Fair.
Okay. All right. So lots of racing still to come this summer. And a Union County Fair, what's the date on that one? Do you know?
The Union County Fair is racing on Sunday, July 25th at 11 a.m. and Monday, July 26th at 11 a.m. Again, that's Sunday, July 25th and Monday, July 26th, 11 a.m. Each day at Marysville.
Okay, great. Well, Bill, thank you again for giving us an update on the Ohio Fair Racing Conference and how it's going.
Thanks for having me on, Michelle.
And that concludes this episode. We'll see you next week for some more horsing around.